Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Israel and the U.S. disagree on the West Bank's future. Is the U.S. dealing with Russia behind Ukraine's back? And Trump talks with Xi Jinping, but their versions differ. First, Israel and the U.S. disagree on the West Bank's future. Once again, Israel's far right is pushing toward de facto annexation of the West Bank in violation of international law. The Trump administration has made clear its opposition. A White House official said that President Trump, quote, has clearly stated that he does not support Israel annexing the West Bank, saying a stable West Bank keeps Israel secure and aligns with the administration's plans for regional peace. These comments came after Israel's security cabinet approved a plan to intensify Israeli control over areas of the West Bank formerly governed by the Palestinian Authority, such as by allowing Israelis to purchase land there. We are deepening our roots in all parts of the land of Israel and burying the idea of a Palestinian state, said far-right Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich. The newspaper Haaretz reports that the Israeli police are avoiding the allocation of forces for operations against Jewish terrorism in the West Bank. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who will be visiting Trump to discuss the matter, apparently has made no effort to contain attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank. Most foreign observers agree that unless Israel stops imposing its will there, there is no hope for a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. As the Washington Post reports, 8 Arab and Muslim countries, including Egypt, Jordan, Turkey, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates, have accused Israel of, quote, accelerating attempts at its illegal annexation and the displacement of the Palestinian people. Is the U.S. dealing with Russia behind Ukraine's back? Many of us suspected this. Secret U.S. talks with Russia about trade and investment deals once the Ukraine war is behind them. The Washington Post reports, quote, days after negotiations to halt Russia's war in Ukraine ended inconclusively in Abu Dhabi, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that Russia and the U.S. were discussing bilateral economic agreements worth some $12 trillion, including deals that would affect Ukraine. Zelensky cited Ukraine intelligence. We already knew from earlier reporting by Axios that an economic deal with Russia was in the works, as Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner talked with Russia's Kirill Dmitriev, a close ally of Vladimir Putin. Zelensky worries that any such agreement will be at Ukraine's expense. He said, quote, some of these agreements could also involve issues related to Ukraine, for example, our sovereignty or Ukraine security. We are making it clear that Ukraine will not support any such, even potential, agreements about us that are not made without us. These behind-the-scenes talks and November elections in the U.S. are putting new pressure on Ukraine to make a deal with Russia. For Russia, big economic deals with the U.S. are going to be crucial to its economy. The war has become very expensive for Russia, and reports are that its oil sales are plummeting. Next, Trump talks with Xi Jinping, but their versions differ. As happened last November, a telephone call between the two leaders was summarized by each in wildly different ways. Here's Trump, quote, it was a long and thorough call where many important subjects were discussed, including trade, military, the April trip that I will be making to China, which I very much look forward to, Taiwan, the war between Russia and Ukraine, the current situation with Iran, the purchase of oil and gas by China from the United States, the consideration by China of the purchase of additional agricultural products, including lifting the soybean count to 20 million tons for the current season, airplane engine deliveries, and numerous other subjects, all very positive. The relationship with China and my personal relationship with President Xi is an extremely good one, and we both realize how important it is to keep it that way. I believe that there will be many positive results achieved over the next 3 years of my presidency. Unquote. The Chinese version of the talks focused, just as it did last year, on Taiwan, with no mention of the other subjects cited by Trump. President Xi, says the readout, emphasized that the Taiwan question is the most important issue in China-U.S. relations. Taiwan is Chinese territory. China must safeguard its own sovereignty and territorial integrity and will never allow Taiwan to be separated. The U.S. must handle the issue of arms sales to Taiwan with prudence, unquote. That last point was in reference to the latest U.S. arms sales to Taiwan of $11 billion. According to the Chinese readout, Trump responded, quote, "I understand how China feels about the Taiwan question. I would like the two sides to continue talking to each other and keep the relationship in good shape during my presidency." After the call, Trump repeated a position he has stated before. "Xi," said Trump, "considers Taiwan to be a part of China, and that's up to him what he's going to be doing. But, you know, I've expressed to him that I would be very unhappy if he'd attack Taiwan, and I don't think he'll do that. I hope he doesn't do that," unquote. Trump evidently believes he can talk up a big trade deal, just as happened after last year's conversation. But phone calls are not negotiations, nor are pledges made during negotiations the same as binding contracts. In other news, the U.S. accuses China of secret nuclear testing. When Donald Trump travels to China in April, he might have one military issue to add to his list of talking points: China's secret nuclear tests. His Undersecretary of State for Arms Control and International Security, Thomas DeNano, said at the UN Conference on Disarmament, quote, "The U.S. government is aware that China has conducted secret nuclear explosive tests, including preparing for tests with designated yields in the hundreds of tons," unquote. The tests would violate the 1996 Comprehensive Nuclear Weapons Test Ban Treaty, to which the U.S. and China are signatories. DeNano cited one specific test on June 22, 2020. He raised the test issue in the context of China's expanding nuclear weapons program. It has around 300 nuclear warheads now and is estimated by the Pentagon to have 1,000 by 2030, expiration of the new START treaty with Russia, and Trump's policy statement last year that the U.S. might resume nuclear testing, quote, "on an equal basis" with Russia and China. Why DeNano raised a six-year-old finding is unclear, though perhaps he was trying to embarrass the Chinese, whose long-standing position on nuclear arms talks was reiterated just the other day. A foreign ministry spokesperson said that, quote, "China's nuclear strength is by no means at the same level with that of the U.S. or Russia. Thus, China will not take part in nuclear disarmament negotiations for the time being," unquote. The spokesperson described the end of the New START treaty between the U.S. and Russia as truly regrettable. What would be regrettable is if the world has to wait until China reaches nuclear parity with the U.S. and Russia before sitting down to discuss limits on strategic and non-strategic weapons, as under the New START treaty. But here's another angle. China's refusal to join Moscow and Washington in nuclear talks may actually be welcome in the Trump administration, which has provided no alternative to the now-abandoned treaty. As one observer writes, quote, "In the blink of an eye, the U.S. went from having 5 decades of virtually uninterrupted arms control talks and deals with Russia to having none, with no new deal in sight. The president and his national security team made no meaningful statement about New START or any outward attempt towards salvaging the deal," unquote. To the contrary, Trump said his administration is considering adding to the U.S. nuclear weapon arsenal and restarting nuclear weapon testing. Russia is denied use of Starlink. Apparently acting at Ukraine's request, Starlink has blocked Russian troops' access to the internet, causing difficulties in communicating and in directing drone strikes. The New York Times reports that, quote, "Russian military bloggers who track the country's armed forces were reporting frustration and communications problems on the front, where Moscow soldiers for years had used smuggled Starlink equipment to gain access to the internet," unquote. Elon Musk evidently ordered the cutoff, writing on X on February 1st, quote, "Looks like the steps we took to stop the unauthorized use of Starlink by Russia have worked. Let us know if more needs to be done," unquote. Ukraine's new defense minister responded with gratitude, telling Musk, quote, "You are a true champion of freedom and a true friend of the Ukrainian people." The U.S. is shifting gears on Central African autocracies. The BBC reports that the U.S. has changed its policy and is now telling three Central African nations that have replaced French with Russian military advisors that it is now willing to work with them on security and economic issues, mainly meaning minerals extraction. Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso all experienced military coups that led their leaders to turn to Russia and reject democratic rule. Under Joe Biden, U.S. military cooperation ended with all three. Now the State Department is following a policy line that could easily be China's or Russia's. Quote, "Democracy is always appreciated," says a spokesman, "but our policy is not to interfere in the internal affairs of other countries. People are free to choose whatever system is appropriate for them," unquote. J.D. Vance promotes trade, ignores human rights, in visits to Azerbaijan and Armenia. The vice president is making his first visit ever by a U.S. president or vice president to Azerbaijan, a country that is firmly in Russia's orbit and mimics Russia's repression of human rights and civil society. Vance is there to promote trade, following conclusion of a peace agreement last August between Azerbaijan and Armenia, which Vance also visited. There, he made a gaffe that wasn't. He laid a wreath to commemorate what he correctly called the Armenian genocide, then had the remark withdrawn to avoid offense to Turkey, whose forces killed over 1 million Armenians between 1915 and 1918. Vance blamed his staff for the supposed error. In fact, the U.S. has officially recognized the genocide in resolutions by the House and Senate in 2019 and in a statement by President Biden in 2021. Trump threatens to block the opening of a new bridge between Canada and the U.S. Donald Trump's anger over Canada's displays of independence has surfaced again, this time over a new bridge that connects Windsor and Detroit. The Gordie Howe Bridge, financed entirely by Canada, but owned jointly by the governments of Canada and Michigan, is scheduled to open early this year. On Monday, Trump said he will not allow it to open in a post on Truth Social, saying Canada had treated the U.S. very unfairly for decades, and that the U.S. would not benefit from the project. That's untrue, of course. The bridge is another trade route between the two countries. It's also a project Trump once hailed. Now Trump is demanding compensation, as well as the, quote, "fairness and respect that we deserve." What accounts for Trump's turnabout? Money, of course. Turns out the owner of a competing bridge between Windsor and Detroit is a trucking billionaire named Matthew Maroon. He met with Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick Monday, and Trump made his threat hours later. The mayor of Windsor called Trump's comments insane, and Senator Elisa Slotkin, Democrat of Michigan, said Trump's threats to tank the bridge project meant he was, quote, "punishing Michiganders for a trade war he started," unquote. Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary, countered that Trump is merely putting America's interests first. Next, there were two important elections in Asia last week. In Japan, Prime Minister Takeuchi Senei won a resounding victory just a little over 3 months into her position. She took a chance that voters were ready for a more tough-minded approach to the economy and to national security, meaning China. Her Liberal Democratic Party won an absolute majority in the lower house of the Diet, or parliament, the first time that has happened in many decades. She'll be able to push through her agenda with little opposition. And in Thailand, the conservative ruling party easily won, ensuring the continuation of nationalist, royalist, pro-military policies. The opposition's pro-democracy stance, which had been expected to prevail, was defeated. Thailand's border war with Cambodia evidently was a factor in the ruling party's favor. Finally, one update from Hong Kong. Jimmy Lai, the media mogul whose Apple Daily was a constant thorn in the side of the People's Republic, was sentenced to 20 years in prison on trumped-up charges of sedition. He has already spent the last 5 years in detention, and this latest ruling will be a death sentence since he is 78. As the New York Times reports, quote, "the decision reached far beyond one man's fate. Along with Mr. Lai, six of his former employees at the shuttered Apple Daily newspaper were sentenced to terms of up to 10 years, establishing a grim new benchmark for the city's once freewheeling media." And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.